The one April Fool's song, I think. So we'll play it this morning, and it's Aretha Franklin, so why not? Good morning, everybody. It's the 1st of April. Welcome to the Roundtable. I am Joe Donahue, and we have an amazing team here to talk about the news of the day. Let me introduce everybody, and then we'll remind you that you can join in as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Newly retired and former Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is to my immediate left. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
Excellent.
Beautiful day out there.
It is.
And that's no April Fool's.
We need that. We like that. Libby Post is with us. She is a political consultant and good to have you with us.
Thank you, dear. It's lovely to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. Albany Law School Professor Sarah Rogerson, who directs the Immigration Law Clinic, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Embattled.
Yes, embattled. We'll get into
immigration's in the news.
All of that in a second. We have a newbie. We have somebody new to join our panel, and we're thrilled. He was on our show a while ago, and we said, hey, would you like to come in and try out and, you know, sit in on the panel? And he said, yeah, why not? Which is usually the level of enthusiasm I get. So that's good. He's assistant professor of psychology at UAlbany. Ewan McNay, good morning, sir.
To be fair, I volunteered. Thank you guys for having me. I may well be the April Fool's joke this morning. We'll find out.
Very nice to have you. And Alan, good morning. Alan Chartok, how are you?
Hey.
The first time seeing you today. How are you?
Hey.
Well, you're not answering my question. How are you?
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. Excellent.
He's monosyllabic this morning.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's panel at WAFC.org if you would like to get in on the fun and talk about the horrible topics that we have to talk about this morning. So we begin with the border. This is, all eyes on poor Sarah here this morning as we start this. And we go to the fact that the Trump White House did something that they had done before, which is threatening to close the U.S.-Mexico border, and then it became more of a serious threat as the weekend progressed. He doubled down on Sunday to close the U.S. border with Mexico, despite warnings that the move would inflict immediate economic damage on American consumers and businesses while doing little to stem a tide of migrants clamoring to enter the U.S. Sealing the border with Mexico, America's third largest trading partner, would disrupt supply chains for major U.S. automakers, trigger swift price increases for grocery shoppers, and invite lawsuits against the federal government, according to trade specialists and business executives. When everyone in the room says, yeah, I think it's a bad idea, and you say, eh, let's do it.
You know,
yep.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Sarah.
Well, this is so cynical. But I'm really hopeful that there are some lobbyists that will get to him before he makes any big announcements that say, you know, you're gonna lose big time if you try to close down the border. Now, policy wise, it's just bad policy. The guy who actually wrote the book on immigration law, Stephen Legomsky, as close as we get to a pop culture hero in immigration professor land, because his book was the one that Ariana Grande was holding in her music video.
Ooh.
Recently. Yeah, big splashy news for immigration law professors. But he pointed out in the Washington Post that literally first of all, it's against the law. You can't do that. You can't close the border. It doesn't work in our immigration law. But secondly, the secondary consequence of that is that everybody's just going to go through the unlawful points of entry. You'll just see a spike in unlawful migration.
What does close the border mean? What does that mean? Like if Mike and I are going on holiday and we want to go down to Cancun for the weekend and drink ourselves silly, can we do that?
That's an open question, right?
Okay.
So, like all of Trump's
immigration
policy.
Remember 2 years ago when we did that, Mike?
Yeah. Crazy time.
But if you remember, it wasn't that good.
If somebody was in San Diego and they wanted to, you know, go down and do some gambling or something like that in Mexico, you know, across the border like a lot of tourists do, or buy some trinkets, whatever, I guess they wouldn't be able to, right? I mean, under this...
It depends, right? So they could have a policy, for example, that says that American citizens who are leaving and entering for recreational purposes have an exception, right? But just like the Muslim ban, I'm guessing there isn't going to be a lot of well-thought-out written guidance that will probably go through three or four iterations of the policy before they find one that sticks. That a lot of lawyers, per usual, are gathering their briefs in order to file, in order to prevent this from happening. And again, that what effectively this will do is hurt the American economy. It's to, what's the phrase?
Self-inflicted.
Cut your nose to spite your face.
Thank you.
Yes.
Any of those.
Of those.
Alan.
You know, there's something else here. I just had an hour-long interview, just come from it, with Oren Radofsky, who is the brilliant filmmaker. You'll be interested in this, Mike, who has done a terrific documentary on the life of Joseph Pulitzer and, you know, what he's done. But one of the things that Pulitzer was heavily engaged in is he fought, I'm sorry to say this to you, Old Man Hearst. On the issue of the Spanish-American War. You thought it was nonsense.
And remember the Maine. That's all I got to tell
that's
you.
That's right.
You'll still get your retirement, Mike. Don't worry.
He thought it was nonsense. And, of course, he ended up having to apologize about it because there's nothing like jingoism to keep this country going.
Well, you gotta have slogans. If Trump were to order the closure, and you know, Mick Mulvaney said on the talk shows yesterday, hey, he's serious about this. This is no bluff. You know, if he orders the closure, I suspect you're right, Sarah. Lawyers will go right to court. There'll be a stay. It won't have any immediate impact, but he'll get the headline, Trump orders border closed.
I've always
it just
said,
adds to the emotion of an emergency, which he created back in December when he unilaterally threw the border thing into the budget negotiations and caused a shutdown that hurt a lot of people, cost $5, $6 billion to the economy. And this border, they say, what, something like $600 billion go back and forth every year? I mean, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
Never mind the communities along the border. These are entire neighborhoods that exist in that zone, which the border is a zone. It's not like a place with an iron door that we shut and put the little, you know, big piece of wood in. It's an area, a large area with lots of different topography. There's no way to close the border. There's just a way to sound, you know, xenophobic. And
there's the economics of that area are there. It's two Nodales. There's a Nodales in Mexico and a Nodales in Arizona, and they go back and forth all day long. Kids go to school. Kids come and do work. I mean, they're back and forth and back and forth. And
they've already closed that Nodales to commercial.
Yeah,
trucks.
And that can really be you know, have an impact on that local level, but as well as nationally. And you know, what about all the food? Mm-hmm. That's in a refrigerated truck that's just going to spoil.
Watermelons and grapes.
Right. You know, and it's just going to cost poor people in this country more to feed their families while at the same time they're cutting food stamps and everything else.
But you know, we've said it 1,000 times, at least I have, and that's what counts. And that is, he wants the issue. I don't think he gives a damn about whether there's a wall or it's the fact that he has put it out there. And I think this falls into the same category.
This is the one thing that he can continually point to his base to and say, see, I'm doing something.
Because our immigration laws legalize racism.
Yeah. Right.
It always has been. Yeah. And it will be until Congress acts. And so it's his only lawful lever to continue that white nationalist agenda. And at the same time, he's shutting down aid. What did Fox and Friends call it? Three Mexican countries.
Right.
Yes. Three amigo countries.
But here's the thing. We have an outstanding psychologist with us today. And what I want to know is, have you taken a look at the Trump persona?
I should clarify, right? I'm a neuroscientist, so...
Better yet.
Could I put Trump into a scanner and get some interesting information? Probably. But you can't diagnose at a distance like this.
Well, that's what I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard, but it's never stopped a lot of people.
I will attempt to avoid, certainly my first appearance, pontificating without too much knowledge. So, no.
Well, that's always
a
mistake.
Oh, why?
That's
a mistake. Come on. Join the club.
You know, when you guys are talking about immigration, I'm a Brit, as you can probably tell, and this whole border closing thing, well, that's coming too. We're about to isolate ourselves, that is the Brits, further and further without some action.
For many of the same reasons.
Xenophobia, basically, yeah. Yes. Which is scary.
So how long do you, when you close the border, how long, I mean, I know there are no details in any of this, but mm-hmm. but do you keep it closed? Is it, how does that work? I don't even understand, like, what you create a crisis and then you solve the crisis by...
And then you let untrained, undirected CBP agents mm-hmm. make discretionary determinations based on...
Which stands
on,
for, I'm sorry.
Customs and Border Protection.
Yes.
And
patrol, I should say. Customs and Border Protection are the men and women who work in our airports and seaports to make sure that the drug trafficking trade is stemmed. My uncle works is head of security at an airport in the Midwest, and says they just seized 8 pounds of fentanyl in somebody's luggage. 8 pounds. That would kill an entire airport.
I thought they were bringing it in on their backs as they climbed under the fences and came across the Rio Grande as smugglers.
That's what so many people think, Mike. But no, because that's what the president what the president keeps saying, but it's not true. So the drugs are coming in through our ports of entry, and largely airports and seaports and land points through commercial vehicles, which I suspect is why they stopped the commercial vehicles from going back and forth in Nogales, but who knows? So if it goes down the same way that the Muslim ban went down, there will be a lot of confusion at first. People will be stuck in immigration limbo. Lots of lawyers will come in and have lots of jobs to do per usual, and then somebody will quick file a stay within 24 hours in a federal court that has jurisdiction, and they'll. Put a stay in place in order for the administration to figure out what it is they really want to do, which will depend on the political reaction, I suspect.
So I want to remind you all that when we think that he couldn't possibly do that for all the reasons you've given, mm-hmm. it'll be terrible for the economy and the rest, he shut down the government for an entire, you know, mm-hmm.
over a month.
Over a month. It was incredible.
And he declared a state of emergency.
And he didn't care.
Nope.
No, it's pure hubris.
Meanwhile, the president also plans to slash hundreds of millions of dollars in aid to three Central American countries in retaliation for what he called their lack of help in reducing the flow of migrants, to the U.S. border. The move was one of Trump's harshest yet as he escalates a confrontation with Mexico and Central America over the surge in irregular migration. Largely involving children and families seeking asylum, Trump has already warned that he could close the U.S.-Mexico border, or at least large stretches of it, in the coming weeks. The State Department said in a statement Saturday that it would be ending foreign assistance program for the Northern Triangle, a region encompassing El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras.
In places where we've invested a lot of money to make sure that benevolent dictatorships have gotten them into the mess that they're in today. Mm-hmm. Honduras is largely...
Benevolent dictatorships that were put there and kept there by the United States
and
for
trained.
Decades.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yep, through the School of the Americas. So... He's creating a fire. He's creating the crisis. He didn't get the crisis he wanted, so now he's creating the crisis that he thinks will justify whatever else he wants to do down there.
This aid, it goes to NGOs.
That's
it doesn't
right.
go to the government. It goes to these outside organizations that train people, educate people, try to sustain water systems and infrastructure so that people in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador will have a chance to succeed.
And
basically want to stay there and help their country mm-hmm. grow. But these countries were devastated by civil wars in the 80s and 90s, and and support, you know, which were largely supported. Mm-hmm. Back in 1980, the United States was spending $1 million a day in the war effort supporting the government of El Salvador against the rebels. I mean, this is a tiny fraction. This is like $500 million over three countries over a whole year, and it's not even been paid yet. I mean, it is just so hurtful to stop these programs that were aimed at helping these countries. Well, if anything, we should just double up on these programs to help these countries get back on their feet, since we had a big role in putting them down like that.
Yeah, but that doesn't help them politically.
No, it doesn't.
The contrast that struck me, you know, the Chinese are currently spending, by any accounts, up to $1 trillion on the Silk Road program, increasing Chinese influence across the world, building links with many developing countries, setting themselves up for the next century to be a global leader. Now you've got a further American reduction in influence, reduction in help to those less fortunate, diminishing the influence and standing of the country. If I could be more cynical and say, is there really a plan to reduce America's role in the world? And if so, why? Because there seems to be a series of actions by the current administration, many of which have that impact, many of which belittle America's standing, programs that get canceled arbitrarily, say you can't trust the U.S. government with, you know, support promises made by previous administration. Where does this end?
Well, while you're on the subject, what were your folks, where you came from, thinking? Was it the same? I mean, obviously their role is going to be diminished more and more and more. And yet, you know, what we think of as a simple majority won to get out of Brexit.
And, you know, as you guys probably all know, the real issue there was that it was a campaign built on lies. You know, when the Scots voted to leave or stay in the Union, they had a 734-page document detailing everything that would happen, all the consequences. When Brexit went to a vote, there was a 4-page pamphlet that said, Brexit means Brexit, means Brexit, means something. Who knows? And we still don't know what it means, you know, 3 years later.
But you have an insight. You know we don't. What those people are thinking.
But we only have 10 seconds. Do you want to wait and answer it on the other side of the
break? Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Let me hold you there, and we'll get right back, and you can answer Alan's question. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Sarah Rogerson, Ewan McKinney, Libby Post, Mike Spain. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Alan will talk to the governor of New York State. We have a brand spanking new budget, so I'm sure that'll be discussed amongst many other items. So that's coming up at 10 o'clock this morning. Ewan, just as we were going to break, Alan had posed a question to you regarding Brexit and where we were, and I will let you answer that question, then we'll move on to some letters.
So the parallels with the current U.S. border situation are reasonable. Major causes driving the leave vote, you know, nationalism. There's certainly a backlash against a perceived political elite that may again resonate with the U.S. It was very much demographic. If you look at the people voting leave, they were mostly old, almost exclusively white. Even by now, the 3 years since the vote, if you took the same vote with the same demographics, the population has become younger and more diverse, you'd get a Remain vote. So it's a vote for what was perceived as regaining sovereignty, very ill-defined.
So is the Prime Minister pulling a double, triple, quadruple fake out here? The reason I say that is she was against it in the beginning, as I remember it. But now she says we have to go forward with it, which makes me think maybe she was for it all along.
Hard to tell. Certainly she has had a very... Theresa May and I agree on almost nothing, but I have some sympathy for her position. She'd been trying to carry through what she perceives as being the will of a referendum in the face of...
She says she is.
...a parliament that cannot agree on anything except they don't like any of the deals. Yeah.
Mm. Well, will this mean that this is not going to happen?
I wish we knew. Currently, the default is we leave on April 12th, except it's not going to happen. Parliament does agree they don't want a no-deal Brexit.
Okay.
Now, does that mean they will leave on the 22nd with a customs union? That's probably the leading candidate right now.
And what is that again?
The UK would remain part of a joint customs union with the European Union. You'd have still free movement of goods, which is a big deal, because if that doesn't happen, you get shortages of food, shortages of medicine in the UK. Whether that allows free movement of people, we don't know. Whether that means we have a vote in the European Parliament, probably not. And so the uncertainty is massive. And I can see from Joe's face, this is like, we're talking about Brexit for half an hour here. Let's go back to the U.S.
So. No, not at all. We spent good time on it last week too. I think it's a fascinating and possibility of another vote, and it is.
But I think the parallelism,
yes,
between the, as you have, yes, pointed out, between what is motivating it here and what is motivating it there is very, mm-hmm, interesting.
And there's another common denominator, and that is both votes were impacted by Russians who were using social right, media to rile people up.
Yeah.
There's an interesting angle if you're a political wonk. So the Speaker of the British Parliament has much more power than the Speaker of the House here in some ways in determining what the government can do, even though he's not a member of that government. And so his rulings that, for instance, Theresa May can't bring back the same deal an infinite number of times for a vote, that's based in constitutional law, but it's been a shock, I think, to the government to see that he's taking an activist role.
I would take some difference with you on one part of that, and that is, yes, because that speaker is supposed to be a neutral figure, whereas the speaker here runs the show.
Sure.
Right.
All right, let's get to letters, and then we'll move on to other topics, and we'll be out in 20 minutes.
Dan says, executive order. Trump pulls aid from Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Honduras. Deplorable. What happened to the president proposes, Congress disposes? Well, we think we know. And then Tom says, if he can close the border for free, what do we need a wall for?
Right.
Excellent
right.
point.
Very good point.
And then Mary says, as noted this morning, assessment of personality or psychology from distance is not possible. How about a comparison of baby steps towards totalitarianism or fascism? Could panel assess that? Well, I've been pretty clean on that myself. I think we're heading that way, and I think that's what he wants, and that's the people he admires around the world. And good point.
Let me give a brief plug. There's an author, Sarah Kendzior, K-E-N-D-Z-I-O-R, who's written several perspectives on the parallels between the rise of authoritarianism here currently and previous history around the world.
You bet. You bet. I was watching Hitler yesterday, mm-hmm, on the Hitler Channel. It all seems so familiar.
The channel?
No, on the History Channel, perhaps.
The History Channel.
Yeah, the History Channel.
We had another name for the History Channel, which is the Hitler Channel.
Wow.
Okay, so anyway, Matt says, immigration and employers. Why is no one talking about U.S. employers who violate the law by hiring undocumented workers to reduce illegal immigration? We must eliminate incentives to come here illegally. Well, that's a very interesting question because, you know, a lot of businesses have...
They rely on them, in fact. Yeah. We had a seasonal agricultural worker program for a reason, and that's because there aren't enough day laborers that want to do that work in the United States, especially in an up economy. Nobody wants to pick the grapes. It's just not a popular job.
Right.
And so, actually, there are many employers that do lawfully employ... individuals who are here on work-based visas. But there are still gaps because we don't have enough of those visas. We don't have enough of those programs. And so if you want the American economy to work, you either have to find a path to legalization or turn a blind eye to some of this undocumented work.
Well, you know, there's something else that I find very interesting, you know, in places in Connecticut and other places. I'm not mentioning anything other than that. You go and, you know, somebody is serving you and you know one way or another that person is not what we call legal in this country.
Documented.
Now, documented. And how many people that I know would move a finger to do anything but protect that person as opposed to turn them in? Doesn't happen.
The Trump Organization employs quite a few people who are not documented.
That's right.
Yes.
All right. Let's go to the story of Joe Biden. Former Vice President Joe Biden scrambled over the weekend and yesterday especially to contain a quickly growing crisis for his likely presidential bid, putting forward several former female aides and allies to praise his treatment of women after Lucy Flores, a former Nevada legislator, accused Mr. Biden of kissing and touching her. Mr. Biden also issued a sweeping statement acknowledging that he had shown, quote, expressions of affection, end quote, to people during his years on the campaign trail, but
He's
said not once, never, that I believe I acted inappropriately. It was the second damage control statement to come from his team since Ms. Flores made her allegation on Friday, and it was released minutes before she appeared on CNN and argued that Mr. Biden's behavior with her at a 2014 campaign event was disqualifying, her word, for a presidential candidate.
Well, first of all, when you said kissing her, it's true, he kissed her, but he kissed her, allegedly, he kissed her on the top of her head, which may be different than some of the stories we've been reading about some contemporary state legislators, for example, or ex-state
or the president.
What'd you say?
Or the president. I mean, let's be real here. The president's got 16 women publicly bringing a suit, you know, against him.
And
for,
that wasn't kissing him on the top of the head.
You know, and that's not about the top of the head. That's about between the legs. And his well, he boasted, didn't he? You know, on that famous Access Hollywood tape, he boasted about grabbing women. And we know that this is how he operates. This is not the same. It's not the same. And I'm sure people will try to say, well, if Trump's doing this, it's the same thing that Biden's doing. I'm not saying that what Biden does is the most appropriate behavior in the world. I think, you know, he comes from an age where men...
It's a cultural and generational thing.
It definitely is. I don't think...
So are you upset by it, Libby, or not?
I'm upset by the blatant politicization of an incident that happened 6 years ago at this point now. She never came forward, and this woman is, like, trying to reinvent herself politically. That's what I'm more upset about. Joe Biden, just like Bill Clinton... If you read, there's a piece in The Atlantic now. Bill Clinton would make you feel like you're the only person in the room. He grabbed your hand. He put his hand on your shoulder.
Maybe not the best example.
Well, yeah. No, I get that. But as a politician, I'm not talking about Monica Lewinsky.
I'm talking about
a politician, as he campaigned. Biden is the same way. Should he be putting his hands on women's shoulders and kissing them on the back of the head? Probably not.
But doesn't Gloria Steinem make a good point, who says maybe Biden and other male politicians should observe their female counterparts? Women candidates are unlikely to hug and kiss men they don't know. Male politicians could refrain from hugging and kissing women they don't know.
Period.
I don't know.
You know, I walked into the NPR meetings.
Everyone hugged and kissed you?
Well, it's interesting because the head person, who happens to be a woman, kissed me on both cheeks.
That was very friendly.
I don't really know her. No. We're adversaries. We are political adversaries.
Well, that was a way of,
But let's face it. In another time, in another era, men being patronizing like that, putting their hands on women's shoulders, you know, the way George W. Bush did it to Angela Merkel back in 2006. It's inappropriate. It's absolutely inappropriate by today's standards. But in another era, that was acceptable. I'm not saying it was right or wrong. I'm saying it was acceptable. And as we sort of transition to a better way of respectful behavior, it's rocky.
I'm just not sure 2014 was that era. And no, I guess but what I would say
maybe the closer to the end of that era.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the more that we accept this behavior in the public square or make excuses for it, the less likely it is to change. So I think what the appropriate critique is that he hasn't learned fast enough to be able to lead us into the next generation of male leadership. And I think that's fair.
I wonder if he'll put his hand on anyone's shoulders moving forward.
Well, what about our psychologist? I mean, he was making, when Sarah was speaking, he was making a move. I wonder what you thought.
He didn't put his hand on my shoulder.
Oh, no.
Let's be clear
about that. Not that kind of move.
Not that
facial expression.
We are in camera, I think. Right. I'm going to keep correcting Alan here because, you know, I've never taken a psych class. I've never taught a psych class.
Wait a second. Why don't you introduce as assistant professor?
My business card says associate professor of psychology. I'm a neuroscientist, so I work with the brain and with a whole bunch of rats.
I work with a whole bunch of rats also.
My psych colleagues would scoff if I described myself as a psychologist. I was struck by the comment from Ash Carter's wife. So there's a photo in the similar story. You know, Joe Biden with his hands on her shoulders, whispering or doing something in her ear, saying, look, this was a close friend moment. I really enjoyed and appreciated that. And that's the difference, I think. If someone invites you and says, look, please, I need some help. Great. Give him a hug.
I don't know that she did invite him. That's the whole point.
Supposedly sensed her nervousness as her husband was being sworn in as defense secretary.
Yeah.
But I suspect that the point a moment ago is absolutely correct. Unless you hold standards to say this has to change, it won't change. And if this was Trump, no one would be making excuses in this panel. Because it's Biden, perhaps there's a different opinion.
Well, Libby points out, there's a big difference between what Trump did and what Biden was doing, right?
Yes. There are some people who will say men putting their hands on a woman at all is inappropriate, which I do happen to agree with, especially if it's unwanted and you don't know who the person is. But to say that, to make the say that we would be going crazy over Trump doing the same thing, the problem is that Trump would never do that. He goes right to the sexual. I'm not sure that this was sexual on Joe Biden's part. I think he thinks of himself as everybody's grandfather.
Mm-hmm. But
that it's right, but I'm just saying I think his head is in a very different place than Donald Trump's is when it comes to women.
So let us remember that Joe Biden still has not announced. The campaign is now telling us that it could be by the end of the month, which seems now, far away to me, but
it's a new month.
Right.
So the allegation came shortly after Mr. Biden faced criticism for saying he wished he could have done something when Anita Hill accused Justice Clarence Thomas of sexual harassment, even though he led the Senate committee that questioned her. So if you put all of that together, doesn't that paint a picture that would be that makes it not impossible, but more difficult to launch a campaign under those circumstances.
Oh! I want to go for a minute, and that is that there was. It seems to me that I've been talking a little while and been writing columns about it. That Andrew Cuomo has been tacking left for a reason. That he's been acting more and more presidential. And when I asked him who he was for, he said he really liked Biden. And then when I talked to him subsequently and said to him, "You've endorsed Biden," and he got testy with me. He said, "I never endorsed him. I like him, which is very different." So if Biden pulls out, it's going to be very interesting to see what Andrew does. And maybe we'll ask him that.
Well, he might feel compelled to fill the gap of that particular
right.
candidate.
I think maybe he knew more than we think he knew.
Well, and if you contrast this with Gillibrand's uprising. her standing up for women who don't want to be touched during the Me Too movement, and sort of something that she's had to explain in the early stages of her campaign post launch.
She's in trouble now because she's being accused of not having been forceful enough of protecting the women on her staff.
Right.
Isn't that funny how we blame women for that so easily?
Well,
and
shouldn't
then
they be?
With Biden?
Let me ask you, Sarah. If it was a guy who was the senator, and the women came to the senator, the guy, and said he didn't move fast enough when informed, you would not be saying what you're saying now.
No, what I'm saying is he would trot out a bunch of women staffers to say, "Oh no, he stands up for us," and everybody would make excuses for him, and it would go away.
I don't know that it does go away.
It wouldn't sink a candidacy, that's for sure.
Well, it's sunk at least one United States
look
senator.
Al Franken's not in office anymore. Say. I mean, it did sink his.
But we also had a picture of him with his hands on a woman's breast.
Well, yes. Yes, you did. And you also have a picture of Biden standing behind this woman, because there is a picture that I saw
Flores.
This morning. Yeah, of standing behind Flores. I don't know. I mean, I agree that there is a double standard when women get caught up in these sexual harassment things, and that but the problem is this: from an optics point of view, Gillibrand made such a big point about this. For her then not to move more quickly, it looks bad. It just looks bad from an optics point of view and a perception point of view. And so, you know, if you're going to make that a political priority, then you have to do it throughout.
We have to take a break, and then I want to get to the letters. But doesn't it also, in the case of Biden, just play into, and I know this is much more serious, but that every time he has tried to run for president, there's just been gaffe
something.
After stupidity after, and that yet here's another thing.
And yet, Joe, each of these things is almost predictable in terms of what's going to happen. And then in order to get by, you have to be able to have handle the carom off the wall if you're playing handball correctly. And he has to know that, doesn't he?
It's a totally different time and reality to run for president now than it was even 4 years ago.
But I think you're right, Alan. I think how he reacts to this is essential in whether he'll be able to survive it. And he's come out and kind of given a blanket statement acknowledging that this was not the only time I put my hands on people's shoulders or, you know,
that's
gave them little kisses. And maybe that's his way to deal with it.
Did you have a reaction to all of this?
To
the latest spate of news stories that about Biden, do you say he's toast, he's stunned, stick a fork
in? No. I think how the next few days play out will determine it. And if I had to bet, I'd say this may sink his candidacy, but you don't know.
It's kind of a luxury to not have a more visceral reaction when these stories come out. As a woman, when I think about that, I cringe. It's not just a little kiss. It is.
What do you mean in this room?
Not anybody in this room, talking about these stories, right?
Yeah.
Of course not, Alan. I sit next to you every Monday. But, you know, I feel it in my bones because as women, we know what that feels like. It's more than just a little playfulness here and there, and it's deeper than that, and we just can't have that in this century.
Should we make something out of, or are we making something out of that the only other Democratic candidate who came out was Bernie Sanders, who said that I'm not sure that one incident alone disqualifies anybody?
It's just part of the self-reifying patriarchy. I'm so glad that they got a quote from Gloria Steinem on this because she needs to be around for another couple decades in order for us to kick this.
Turned 85 last week and won't be in our region this week. So
now there's a video going around showing Joe Biden and all of his.
Well, you know that's going to happen. I mean, they've got this guy for, you know, they've been following him. His political career for 40 years. So there's a lot of stuff.
And there stands Trump.
Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll come back. We'll do letters and then we'll finish up and have the governor read at 10 o'clock. We'll be right back. Last call. Here's some letters and then we'll have the governor of New York State with us beginning at 10 o'clock. Alan, go ahead.
But let me make it plain. Somebody wrote and said, why can't we have the governor of Massachusetts on? And the answer is we'd love to have the governor of Massachusetts on and we'll give him the time. And we have invited him and same thing there. Okay, here we go. Gene says, Biden acts creepy. Men feel entitled to touch women and comment on their
Fair
looks.
Enough.
Biden is an entitled man. He has smelled and touched many women. There's a compilation video of him acting creepy on YouTube. Stop defending bad behavior from, quote, good guys. And that's from Gene. And then Diana says, Biden's wandering hands. Dismissing or excusing 76-year-old former Vice President Biden's alleged behavior because of his age, because he is of a different generation, insults men and women who now know how to keep their hands to themselves. And that's from Diana. In Greenfield. And Lisa says, can Democrats please use some careful logic when attacking Joe Biden, who is a former VP who is kind, loving, empathetic, wise, and respected in the world? Sure, he's given a creepy uncle kiss to some women who may not have wanted to be kissed. But why can Republicans overlook a scary orange clown raping girls, publicly paying off porn stars and Playboy bunnies for affairs, knowingly stating he grabs women by the bleep, locking children in cages, and using the office of the president to enrich himself and his family? Republicans don't care. I'm not saying Democrats should overlook any of the Me Too problems, but we need to weigh these events much more carefully and with a long goal in mind. Dems will reelect Trump by acting this way. And that's from Lisa in Pequot.
And I get that, but we have a deep bench for president in the Democratic Party. So, you know, I'm not as concerned about that false equivalency. We shouldn't make it when we're having this conversation, mm-hmm. but I'm not concerned that we're disqualifying candidates that are not going to bring us into leadership and the kind of leadership that we need, especially
mm-hmm.
male candidates.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I pass.
That's all right.
And
I did it on purpose because I knew we only had 3 minutes.
Allison,
pull that pin out of that grenade.
Yeah, that's right.
Run
Allison
out of the room.
Says, hugging. America is so puritanical. Have you watched other countries? Men and women, women and women, hug and kiss on both cheeks as a way of greeting. It is not sexual. And that's from Allison and Carmel. And then Kathy says, Joe Biden, I grew up in that area. We worked in that era. I've had many men behave like Biden. It was considered to be sweet. Not all men did it. Some men were demonstrative. This is also the generation of women who hugged men. Hands on shoulders, very common behavior, showing support from senior to junior. The world has changed, is still changing. It is paternalistic and maternalistic. Did the woman tell him she didn't like it? And that's from Catherine.
But the point, which I think Sarah made brilliantly, is, but do we, if times have changed, do we need, and I don't know the answer to this, but do we need the 76-year-old guy?
This is not the only reason why perhaps another candidate should emerge in the eyes of many Democrats. They want new faces, new blood, new ideas. And
Benny Hill
this
is
Mayor
just,
Pete, he yes. raised $7 million right. since January.
You know, I'm now, I mean, I was all for Biden because I thought he could beat Trump. But I'm looking at Pete Buttigieg. And,
South Bend, Indiana.
Yeah, and thinking that, you know, he has the opportunity here to be a new face with a politic that is sort of right down the middle. It's not like he's ultra left or ultra, you know, sort of swinging to the right. And he makes a lot of sense and could do this.
Well,
I
Sarah's
really
right.
do think he could.
There's a deep variety of choices currently. You got Andrew Yang. You got Cory Booker. You got a whole variety of people with often new ideas without some of the potential baggage you might bring.
Or with some baggage of their own.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's all about electability.
All right.
And that's what's important.
We're out of time. Thanks to everybody. Thank you to Libby Post, Sarah Rogerson, Ewan McNay, Mike Spain. We will be back after a short break with the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, with Alan Chartok right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning featuring Dr. Alan Chartok and the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo.
Welcome, Governor.
Top of the morning to you, Doctor.
Or should I say welcome, President?
No. Welcome, Governor, who will work very hard to elect a Democratic president, because if we don't replace Mr. Trump, then we all have to move to a different country, would be a problem, since we already have a big migration problem on this globe.
What if you wait, you told me. Here's the history of this thing. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you will. You told me on this show that you thought that Biden was your favorite, that Biden was the guy that you liked. Then I made the sad mistake of saying to you one day, well, Governor, you endorsed Biden. And you said, no, I didn't endorse him. I like him. Now, there are those of us who think that you may be positioning yourself in case he gets out to get in. Can you give me an unequivocal answer to that?
I think you should take those people who think that way with you, and you should find an organization that can do a support group to help people who are chronically cynical and always looking for a deception or an ulterior motive, even when none is presented, and when a person could not have been more honest to you, even at the expense of their own ego. The presidential discussion is flattering. I believe Joe Biden, who hasn't announced for president yet, so everything is a little premature, is an extraordinary individual. I've worked with him. I know him. He's a personal friend. His son, God rest his soul, who is an attorney general with me, was a personal friend. We go back decades. I think he is the strongest Democratic candidate, and I think the goal is to beat Trump. And sometimes you take your ego aside and say, how do I best help the team? And they say, well, you should play shortstop. You say, I really wanted to play first base. They say, well, you can best help playing shortstop. You say, okay, I'll go play shortstop. But how about passing the greatest budget of the past decade?
Okay, let's talk
if
about
not
that.
The best, several decades.
Let's talk about that. There does seem to be a lack of capital projects in that budget. How come?
Oh, interesting.
Oh,
that you would note that.
Mm-hmm.
See, I have to be careful with you because most people I deal with don't really understand the state government or budget, but you do. We have a $150 billion infrastructure plan, which is the most aggressive infrastructure plan in the United States of America. It follows on a $100 billion infrastructure plan, which was the most aggressive building plan in this nation. And I really believe when they write the history books, they'll look back and they'll say, during the Cuomo administration, they seized the opportunity when the federal government wasn't doing anything and other states weren't doing anything to actually rebuild the state, new airports, new roads, bridges, et cetera. The capital projects and the capital budget is not fully included in this budget. That is true. We have more to negotiate on the capital side, and we'll do that in the coming weeks.
Okay. Now,
but a very good, that was an impressive,
you think so?
Catch by you. Yeah. That was impressive.
Now, I have advisors, let me just say that, who are brighter than I am. Okay, so now, let's just say that Speaker Hasty said lawmakers had to hold their nose to pass the budget. That's the budget you just said is the best in history. Quote, this is not a great budget. There's not a lot of happiness in this budget. There are lots of things missing in this budget. This is not one of the best budgets we did. Is he wrong?
Well, where you stand is where you sit. I think it was the best budget that Speaker Hasty has done in his tenure. Why? Because for me, the true test of a government character, really a person's character, is what they do when confronted with the tough ones. The old expression about a legislator is he or she who does nothing wrong. Legislators just tend to avoid tough votes. They want to be liked, they're politicians. So just don't take a tough vote. Don't make people unhappy. Don't do anything controversial. Yeah, but how about the issues that require a difficult vote? Those are the issues that tell you what the person is all about. The gun control issues cost me 15 points in the polls. In the Clinton administration, cost Congress people their jobs in the midterm election. Guns, a woman's right to choose, these are the toughies. And there were toughies in this budget. Criminal justice reform, where ending cash bail, that was a difficult issue.
Yeah, the DAs didn't like it.
DAs didn't like it. Politicians were nervous about it. It looks like you're releasing criminals. It was exactly the right thing to do. When did we write a justice system that said rich people can pay bail and they can leave, and poor people can't pay bail, so they stay?
Well, I agree with that. But what happens, yeah, Governor, when the first guy comes out bailless and kills somebody?
Well, the bail system was not designed to hold poor people. It's the legal standard is flight risk. It has evolved into, well, rich people with a fancy lawyer can leave, and the poor people sit in Rikers Island, which is one of the most inhumane, disgusting government conditions imposed on individuals in this country. Abusive,
people sit there for 2 or 3 years. They haven't even had a day in court.
Well, you're right.
You haven't been proven guilty of anything.
Well,
anyway,
you're right.
Criminal justice reform. Congestion pricing, they've been trying to pass since Governor Nelson Rockefeller, Mayor Lindsay, Mayor Bloomberg tried. Very difficult in Carl Heastie's conference. So from Speaker Heastie's point of view, these were difficult issues. But you know what? He got them done. And that's what leadership is all about. Taking on the tough ones. I say to people, I don't want to know what you did on the easy issues. I want to know what you did on the tough issues that gave you that unease in the pit of your stomach.
Well, wait a second now. The public campaign financing thing, which ends up doing the usual thing, you know, setting up yet another commission instead of doing the right thing here, to study the issue is a punt. And I hear from a very good friend of mine that it comes down to who the ninth member on that commission is going to be as to whether we're having public campaign financing. And frankly, Governor, I don't like what the legislature, and particularly the Assembly and Mr. Heastie, have done here, because I think they don't want it, and they voted for it when the Republicans were in power. Now they don't. There's a question there somewhere.
You should raise this issue in your overly cynical support group.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just another commission,
yes,
which I agree. We've had enough commissions that do reports that sit on the shelf. This is a commission that comes up with a law that becomes effective at the end of this year, unless within 20 days the legislature comes back and passes a new law, which is chances of that happening are 1 in a million. The vote is 2 for the Senate, 2 for the Assembly, 2 for the governor, 2 for the minorities, and they pick another person. It's not a report. They will come up with a law, and it is fairly balanced. As a matter of fact, the governor has less power than in the normal lawmaking process, because I have no veto here. And we will have a public financing system.
So who's the ninth person going to be?
Now, by the way, public financing is another one of those tough issues. It's not, I'll bet you it's not 50-50 in the Assembly.
That's right, because 50. Those guys, that's right. Sorry for interrupting. I would never want to do that. But those guys got elected the old way. Why would they want the new way? They've been able to push it off on the Republican Senate when they were there, but now they got to face the music, and Heastie's got to carry the water for them.
Well, that's the Assembly and the Senate, my friend. And you're right. They've gotten away with murder. They can go to a press conference and say, I'm going to light my hair on fire unless there's public financing. But nobody really believed it was going to happen. what I did was say, oh, really? You have all those press conferences? You're going to have all the theatrics? Okay, we're going to actually have public financing. Now, look, I originally, years ago, didn't support public financing either. Why should the public pay?
Well, you're very good at fundraising.
But it's not that. It's I just have gotten to a point where I think the turnover is good, and I think there's such lack of trust in the system that this is a way to make people feel that their contributions are more impactful and restore trust. And hopefully we get some more talent, frankly, and more people who understand government and want to use it as a vehicle to make a change rather than just politics, politics, politics.
Will this be part of your
people are talking with no knowledge about what they're talking about.
Will this be part of your presidential platform when you're running, when Biden steps aside?
You are a dog with a bone, my friend, a dog with a bone.
Okay, I want to move on. Why didn't marijuana get included in the budget? Now, let's go back here. You used to be against it. You talked about a gateway drug and all the rest of it. Then you changed. You said Massachusetts is going to eat our lunch tax-wise. New Jersey, which, of course, just screwed it all up and isn't having it, are going to eat our lunch. But now you're for it. How can you explain the fact that you used to be against it and now you're for it?
Evolution. Look, I am a relatively middle-aged, advanced
middle-aged,
somewhere in there person.
Yeah.
I was a former district attorney. I'm a parent of three young women who I'm trying to help through the perils of youth. And yeah, look, I grew up in a generation where you, no drugs, that was a bad thing, no alcohol, don't drink and drive, drunk driving, God forbid you smoke a joint and you get behind a car. I had sleepless nights waiting for the daughters to come home. You can't sleep until you hear that doorknob open. So, yeah, I started from a different position. Life moves on. Facts change. I changed my opinion. We will get marijuana done. It's not a question of political desire. It's a question of practical reality of how you put the new system in place, which, Alan, is not easy. You still need to control and regulate. You don't want 14-year-olds having access to marijuana. So how you do it is, frankly, the tougher part of the equation.
So how do you
and
do it?
In the rush of the budget, we couldn't do it intelligently. And we have a whole rest of the session. So I said, we can sit down. We have to do that. We have to look at prevailing wage, which I think is a legitimate issue. But it's not that there wasn't a political desire to do marijuana. There actually wasn't the time to do it. And look, I laid out an agenda last December of 20 items. I basically said, just before my inauguration, you know, the world is spinning out of control. We have climate change. We have real economic problems. The federal government is assaulting us. Our revenues are down. You have this new political extremism where everybody has a 100% opinion, but nobody has any facts. This is tough. And I laid out a 20-point agenda. Frankly, the most aggressive agenda I've ever laid out. We have done all of it but one, which is marijuana, and that is, frankly, because we didn't have the time to do it right, in my opinion.
Okay, let's go to upstate prisons. You're going to close two or three, I read in the paper. I don't know. I heard it was going to be two because they didn't want to do three. You know, as you know, prisons become an economic engine in some areas of upstate New York. So which two?
We have to do an analysis. We said two or three because really the way the system runs is by the number of beds, not the number of buildings. We don't need 1,200 beds. Now, 1,200 beds could be two big facilities, three smaller facilities. That's why the two or three. It wasn't your comprehension. It was just the different equivalent of measurement. And we're going to do an analysis. Not needing prisons is a good thing, by the way. Not locking up people in jail cells is a good thing. Alternative to incarcerations is a good thing. Reducing crime is a good thing. I know there are economic engines in upstate New York, but God help us if we have to get to the pearly gates and say to God, I created jobs in upstate New York by locking up people who didn't need to be locked up, right?
Right. Gotcha. But I bet you know where they're going to be.
I'm going to walk you to that support group for Cynics Anonymous.
Yeah, I got it. I am. I plead absolutely guilty. I'm one of the more cynical people in the world.
I don't know. Yeah. If I knew, I would tell you. I would tell you. Why wouldn't I? You don't think you're going to wind up knowing? Think I'm going to close a prison and nobody knows?
In some part of your mind, there must be a little nugget which says these are the ones. Oh, anyway.
No, there is no nugget.
No, okay.
This is not something you can do and hide. You cannot secret the fact of closing prisons.
You got to negotiate with a lot of people here. Okay, the 2% tax cap is being made permanent. This is a huge win for you, right?
Amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. Yes.
Yes.
Look, we're under assault. The federal government is raising our taxes. Property taxes are the highest tax in the state, not state income tax, which we also reduced this year, by the way, that nobody noticed because we did so many things. We reduced the state income tax for the middle class up to $300,000. But property taxes are about three times what your income tax is. So And then the federal government says we're going to raise it. So giving people the confidence and the stability, it will not go above 2% a year after all those years where it went up astronomically and in an abusive way. When you raised property taxes 6, 7, 8% every year, it was abusive. People's income wasn't going up that high. The house value wasn't going up that high. My bank account wasn't going up that high. And you're going to raise my taxes 6, 7, 8% every year. Where was I supposed to get the money?
I got it.
It was why people are disgusted with government. And they think it's arrogant and abusive. Because it can be.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. No, you shouldn't be sorry. I just have so little time to ask you so many questions. And so that's my problem here. Now, you have the nation's second plastic bag ban. Of course, the other state of Great Barrington, Massachusetts, had it before you do. And, you know, you learn how to live with it. And you got criminal justice reform, you get congestion pricing, and an increase in education spending. So I want to ask you a question. You're upstate New York, you take your car, you're going to Brooklyn. You get on the West Side Highway, and you go through the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. Do you pay the price?
Yes.
So as long as you're going by it, right?
Yes. What this has done, quote-unquote congestion pricing for New York City, it, in many ways, first and foremost, equalizes the tolls of everybody going into Manhattan. For those people who don't live there, there are some bridges that are free, some bridges that you pay a toll. It steers all the traffic to the free bridge, obviously. And there was never a rationale for it. It was just political ineptness and political controversy because the local politicians, nobody wants to increase a toll. That's why when you said, I said Carl Heastie, this was one of his finest jobs of leadership. He has all those members down there. You say toll increase. A politician says no. That's what they say. That's the knee-jerk reaction. You say, well, this is just fair. This will actually reduce congestion. By the way, we have to fund the MTA, and how are we going to do it? If not tolls, we'd have to increase fares 30%. Yeah, those are the facts, but they don't want to hear the facts. They just don't want to take a tough vote. And he got tough votes done. And look, he could have said to me as Speaker, this one is too tough. I don't want to go to my members with a tough vote, which many speakers have said to me, and most legislators say to me on a daily basis. So that's why since Lindsay and Rockefeller, and every elected since has tried to do this openly or quietly, and we actually got it done.
The plastic bags, you want to talk about that for a second?
Home run, finally. Those plastic bags, they are terrible. Environmentally, they're terrible. You go into our cities, you see them hanging in the trees like bizarre Christmas ornaments. You know, in the rich communities, they send a person out with this stick to pull down the bags. In the poor communities, they just hang there until they deteriorate. And by the way, they don't deteriorate. They're in ponds, they're in rivers, they're everywhere. They're totally unnecessary. I tried to do this for years, and we finally got it done. And also, by the way, you have a little edge in your voice when you talk about that Massachusetts did it first.
Yeah, well, not Massachusetts, Great Barrington did it first.
Okay, Great Barrington.
But you also, not Massachusetts.
You seem to have a reverence for Massachusetts that you don't have for New York, which is a little disturbing, frankly.
I see. Really? Okay.
It annoys me as the governor of New York. I get defensive. I'm competitive. And I'm sensitive.
You?
Yes, a little bit. I'm competitive and I'm sensitive. You don't see me as a sensitive soul. I'm very sensitive and defensive about New York. So when someone tries to suggest there's a better state somewhere, yeah, I get protective.
I hear you. Even if you're wrong?
Yes, I still get protective.
Okay. Now, what about that $25,000 a plate fundraiser?
Even if you're wrong, I like that.
What about that $25,000 a plate fundraiser with your budget director present right before the budget? What campaign were you raising money for? Now, are you raising money to run for president? You're going to do a fourth term? What's the deal?
Obviously, I'm running for president. That was a presidential fundraiser.
So what is that 25? What's the justification for raising all that money and doing it right before the budget? It's unseemly.
I actually had a reporter ask me, "You was that fundraiser for president?" I said, "Well, it would be the first time anyone ever used state campaign limits to run for president."
What are you going to do with all that money? I mean, that's a lot of money. What are you going to do with it?
I am going to...
Are you running for a fourth term, yes or no?
I haven't slept in 5 days doing this budget. You think you could show me a little professional courtesy?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, at least you're honest. I am... The fundraiser is by state limits, so it can't be used to run for president or for mayor. I use it to help do my job. I will run commercials to help pass a budget. I will run public information campaigns. This is congestion pricing. This is why we should reduce taxes. And I am not running for president. I am governor, and I have my only plan now is to serve as governor. And then, good Lord willing, 3¾ years down the road, we'll see where we are. But I would want to be in a position, if the people would have me, to run for re-election.
Okay, I'm almost out of time, so I got to ask you this.
Or I'm going to be a radio commentator and harass the bejesus out of people on the radio.
You'd be good. You'd be very good for that. Now, your aide, my former student, who I really liked, Rich Azzopardi, called three young lawmakers effing idiots about a position that they took. Did you let him know that that was unacceptable?
Did you teach him in class when you had him that even when you get emotional, you shouldn't? There's a decorum that must be maintained?
Don't remember. I don't remember what happened yesterday.
I think you need that wasn't a necessary part of your education. And maybe you could make the correction to the curriculum. The emotions run high. I get that. My emotions run high also. I think it's very important that we maintain a civility and a decorum. And a respect, a mutual respect. We can disagree, but there has to be a mutual respect. And that is, we have zero tolerance for that. And Rich knows that. Yes.
You told him. And, you know, because those people think you cut them loose to do that. One of those people is me.
9 years. Have you ever heard anyone use that language?
No.
And look, forget this. This was silly, what these, this issue. But I mean, on more serious issues, have you ever heard anyone who's worked for me?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you for at least being fair.
And you've had reason to do it.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, I've had you. I have a list of reasons. And as soon as I'm out of office, I'm going to go back, right?
I'm not taking your call when you're out of office. Okay, you got 1 minute. What's the number one priority? I got to be out of here by 10:29. My guys have told me that that's what you're demanding. So what's the top priority for the rest of the session?
We have to work on the marijuana issue, prevailing wage issue, rent regulations would be at the top, and more of my job is an operational job, actually making things happen. You know, getting laws passed is part of my job. I have to get to work on the MTA management reforms, upstate economic development projects that Amazon loss hurt us. It hurt our credibility. Corporations don't know if they can trust us anymore.
Yep.
After that, offer was scuttled in a total political fashion. So
Senate
I get
Democrats.
Back to operational work. I also take a little bit of a break. I have to take my mother to dinner. I haven't seen her in a while. I have to fertilize the lawn. I have to go spend some time with my kids, who I haven't seen in the past few weeks. So, and I have to go advertise that it is fishing season, trout season, big tourist engine for upstate New York. Maybe you'll come with me. Do you fly fish,
I would love
doctor?
To go in a canoe with you. Listen, we're out of time. I can't spend any more time here. I do appreciate your coming on. You're a good guy to do that, and I so appreciate it, as we all do. Would you stop going on those other radio stations and just stick with us, please?
I will. Are you hanging up on me?
No, sir.
Oh.
No, sir.
But you're finished with the conversation.
My news
you've
director.
Determined the conversation. Is
my
over.
News director, Ian Pickus. A great man came in here, and he said, at 10:29, you are out. It says on the top of my script here, stop at 10:29.
Okay. So, I just want to establish the fact that you have decided our conversation is over and you're hanging up. I understand. It's happened to me before, incredibly.
Thank you, Governor.
Thanks, buddy.